Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week 12 edition of A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Denny Carter. We're coming at you a day early this week because I don't know if you've heard about this little thing called Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Schedule's a little different. We're doing this show today. We're doing a Thanksgiving preview slate on Tuesday, previewing the rest of the week 12 slate on Wednesday. So things just a little bit different, but you're going to get all the same content from us. Today, Denny, I'm going to be talking all the biggest news of the week, Seahawks' struggles, the Cowboys' receiver injuries, Titans' collapse. Then we've been planning this segment for a really, really long time. We are going to redraft the first five rounds of 2021 fantasy drafts. We didn't come up with this 3 minutes before the show started, and it's going to be a real treat. We've been putting research into this for just months.
It was not 3 minutes. It was more like 6 minutes.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. I guess we're planners. We're big planners. But first, something I have been planning on for several weeks, Denny, is it is Thanksgiving. Everyone in the audience wants to know. Everyone on Twitter, everyone in the White House, everyone in the Senate, everyone in the European Union.
Yes.
All the world around wants to know, basically, what are your worst Thanksgiving takes? Because we know it's not a matter of if you have bad Thanksgiving takes, but how many bad Thanksgiving takes that you have?
I have to thank Thanksgiving for helping me, gain attention as a bad take haver on Twitter a long
Not
time
surprised
ago.
To hear that.
10 years ago, I said, I'll let you please, if you're going to sip coffee during this segment, you might want to like cover your computer because it could be an issue. But I said that corn is the best. Is the best Thanksgiving, best part of Thanksgiving food wise.
In like what way?
Corn, just like corn.
You mean like a shock of corn? Like
whether it's on the cob, whether it's not on the cob, just give me some corn.
It's not even a staple of Thanksgiving. I mean, I think I've had corn at Thanksgiving. I don't think it's just like set out on the table though. It's more of like a summer dish, Denny. Maybe maize, maize is corn, but celebrate some of our Native American heritage with some maize. I didn't think really corn was a big part of the holiday.
Apparently not in your household, perhaps, but it has been on my table for basically my whole life. Also, stuffing is underrated, severely underrated.
Oh, I thought you were going to say overrated because it is like maybe the most overrated thing on the planet.
I mean, anything but turkey is good.
That is the thing. And the crazy part is that's not even really a hot take from you. It's something just like around America, like around our dinner tables, around our water coolers. Here's me standing. I've stood at a water cooler with coffee before, obviously. Yes. And it's one of those things. Everyone's like, turkey's just kind of bad, isn't it? And everyone's like,
It's not good. It's not good. Sorry. I mean, I guess if you drown it in gravy, then yeah, I guess. I mean, I know people put like cranberry sauce on it, which is just horrific. Sorry.
The problem is turkey's always so dry. It's like it was like sent over on like a 2 month voyage with like the British army when they're like invading the country in like the 18th century. Like it's been like, it's like salt pork or something basically. It's like, why is turkey always so dry? I mean, this bird was probably slaughtered, you know, like a couple of weeks ago. It's been preserved well, but not like, like I don't understand why it's always so dry.
And I can anticipate the pushback here, and the pushback will be, Pat, you just haven't had good turkey.
I know.
You got to get my aunt to cook it for you. You got to try my mom's cooking, my dad's, my uncle's, whatever.
Bad.
No. I've had many kinds of turkey for Thanksgiving, cooked by all sorts of people who mean well, you know, and it comes out and it's dry. Sorry. You know, it's and yes. And our producer, Johnny, says turkey got the tryptophan. It has the tryptophan, which makes you sleepy. And I didn't believe that until one day when I was a kid. I looked around and every male member of my family was asleep on couches and chairs while we watched a Dallas game. So I believe that the tryptophan does really kick
in.
I don't think
it's the trip. I think it's the beer lobby who wants you to think that it's not the 2.5 beers. Because, you know, we're in our mid-30s now. Like 2 or 3 beers, you know, I just fall asleep.
Oh, sure.
I just instantly fall asleep, like right. Wherever I stand, like the second I consume half of my third beer, I just pass out where I stand and night is over.
Yeah, right. Even if you intend to finish that third beer and maybe have another one, it just doesn't work. Like that's happened to me since I've had kids, is I'll be like, now it's time to drink some beer on Thanksgiving. And barely finished 2 and I'm like, okay, well, I'm done.
I don't even usually drink on Thanksgiving. I just like dial in on the football and kind of go all in on, we were talking before the show, but pecan pie or sometimes pumpkin pie. I kind of just go all in. And like, that's honestly, that's what Thanksgiving has become to me. Kind of just like enduring the main dishes and then getting to the pie basically. I'm going to eat the turkey, but I'm just like, when's the pie hit? Basically, that's my take.
Can I ask, what time do you usually eat Thanksgiving meal, dinner, whatever you're going to call it?
I would say it's usually right as the Dallas Cowboys are getting their backs broken in the third quarter.
Oh,
so that's about 5:30 Central Time. I'd say usually 5:30 or 6. We're kind of on the later side.
All right, then I guess maybe I'm in the minority here because I have had Thanksgiving dinner as early as kickoff for the Lions game.
What?
Yes. Yeah, I know. I mean, like we're sitting down, like ready with our plates at 12. It starts 12:30.
It starts 12:30 Eastern. Tim Boyle, Andy Dalton, get your turkey ready.
And yeah, and I'm like, wait, is this dinner? What are we doing later for food? Because I'm going to be hungry. And of course, you can have leftovers or whatever. But you're so thrown off at that point. You eat it. You eat dinner at 12. It's lunch. So you feel like you're having a fourth meal at some point.
No, yeah, we always go closer to conventional dinner time. And yeah, I always miss. So that, you know, you miss like Robert Griffin III's like fifth touchdown against the Cowboys then when you do that. But
I remember that.
That's the price you pay. Anyways, we're probably going to be uncorking lots of bad Thanksgiving takes throughout the week. We got 3 shows. We got plenty of time to alienate every single listener. Who has alienated every single viewer these past 2 weeks, Denny, is Russell Wilson.
Oh, yes.
He has 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and 13 total points in 2 games since returning. He's lost to Aaron Rodgers on one day's rest. He's lost to Colt McCoy at home. A Joe fan, and a longtime Seahawks observer, kind of like made the observation. Everyone's thinking that this felt like the end of an era type loss for the Seahawks. Yeah, Denny, is this the death rattle, basically, of this era of Seahawks football?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson put on a happy face after getting, you know, drubbed by the Colt McCoy-led Cardinals. Colt McCoy threw for 328 yards.
That doesn't happen.
I saw the thing you retweeted yesterday. He literally turns into Steve Young when he faces Seattle. I mean, how can that happen? Anyway,
that's a very Joker-fied Seahawks follower, by the way, named John Benny. A lot of good Seahawks tweets.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why someone would be Joker-fied. The Seahawks had no business looking that bad at home against a Kyler Murray-less, DeAndre Hopkins-less Arizona team that, you know, moved the ball at will on the ground, through the air, to the tight end, to the wide receiver. It didn't matter. So, yeah, it felt end of an era-ish. And I mean, for fantasy purposes, I hope it is.
Yeah, and, like, you know, it's sad. It's always kind of bitter when these things end, too. I mean, I was thinking about this. It's, Yeah, I don't like seeing like Russell Wilson, like Pete Carroll, like at loggerheads. It's like kind of seeing like your grandpa and your brother like upset at each other. Mm-hmm. It's just like, why can't you guys just get along? But, yeah. You know, this has lasted, this coach quarterback relationship has lasted, you know, 99.99999% longer than like of all the coach quarterback relationships in NFL history.
Yeah.
Like these things just happen. This has run its course clearly. Cause you know, like I wrote this in my article and I'm going to share my same old joke. Like, you know, like sometimes some people like the old trope, like have a kid to save the marriage. Yeah. the kid to save the marriage was Shane Waldron, you know, like the Sean McVay disciple as play caller. And it's just made absolutely zero difference.
No, it couldn't. And it made, yeah.
The problem is probably Pete Carroll, and it probably needs to be Pete. You know, he needs like a Sunset College job. Or just, you know, this has been one of the best runs of the 21st century for any coach. Like Pete Carroll truthing gets like way out of control. Like he's an elite all time great coach, but he just seems out of gas, out of steam with this era of Seahawks football. And yeah, it's time for a parting. And yeah, I mean, are we still trusting DK Metcalf as a wide receiver one? Are we still trusting Tyler Lockett as a wide receiver two? Or is it so dire that even that we like, you know, we dock them down to like wide receiver two, wide receiver three.
You know, you're starting them, you know, and especially, you know, in 12 team formats, like you drafted them, you probably don't have a better option on your bench. So you're starting them, but like expectations, I think we talked about this last week after Russell Wilson's, you know, horrific game against Green Bay.
That was an all time bad performance. It's
really bad. I had that game for blurbing purposes and you know, the throws to the perimeter, throws downfield, they fluttered. They didn't.
He was just inaccurate. Yeah. He was just straight up inaccurate.
Didn't look right.
I haven't seen yesterday's game yet, so I don't really know how he even looked on Sunday, but just horrifyingly inaccurate in week 10.
Five rushing attempts over these two games, by the way, for Russell Wilson. So he's not, you know, he has very little path, a very narrow path to, you know, fantasy production, to decent fantasy production, but that's not necessarily new when I think about it. You know, last year, especially down the stretch, during that bad stretch on the second half of last year, his only blow up games, or not even blow up, but like solid games, came when he had a touchdown spike. It wasn't a yardage spike. It wasn't a rushing spike. It was just, hey, he threw four touchdowns against the Jets or whatever.
Which he did, like every time he had a good matchup, basically.
Right. But that volume-based production that we got, you know, like spoiled with, honestly, in the first half of 2020, that's nowhere to be seen. It never returned. They still want to establish. Pete Carroll still talks about establishing the run after every loss. <He does. laughs> it's so repetitive and depressing. Just get it over with.
Honestly. Yeah, it's time to establish the DJ Dallas. Final question on this topic is: he gets Russell Wilson. He gets your beloved football team on Monday Night Football next week. So, Denny, yeah, by the way, you can't blurb the football team game this week. Will Russell Wilson be a QB1 against the football team in week 12?
No.
Oof, really? Man.
No, yeah. Yeah. I think you gotta figure out something if you're a Russell Wilson drafter. I mean, you know, that it's in one quarterback leagues, you can find a better option. I truly believe that. And yes, I'm sure in your league, everybody rosters four quarterbacks. And there's nobody, and Russell Wilson, you had to take Russell Wilson in the second round or something. But you know, in a regular league, you can do better.
There's only two teams on bye, so there will be some streamer options this week. Another guy you might need to stream for is Ryan Tannehill. The Titans finally completed the offensive collapse they'd kind of low-key been working on since Derrick Henry got injured. They committed five turnovers. They scored 13 total points against arguably the worst team in the league and the Texans. Tannehill has only five total touchdowns in three games since Derrick Henry's injury. And he suddenly has only one more passing touchdown than interception on the season. Denny, with Julio Jones out on injured reserve, AJ Brown banged up, are things going to get worse, but they get better for this Titans offense? And yes, Ryan Tannehill he kind of like artificially emerged, I feel like, on the QB1 streamer radar, like his rushing touchdowns over the past month. But can we really be treating this guy as like QB1 adjacent right now?
No. And I mean, when an offense loses its centerpiece, like the whole Titans offense was based around having Derrick Henry and Derrick Henry's unique ability to have explosive runs and consistent runs in any game script. And when you take that away, you're left with a quarterback who before Derrick Henry was looking more like, you know, backup material than he was starter.
Yes.
You know, starter worthy, along with a terrible core of pass catchers. AJ Brown is constantly hurt. Every time he goes into a pass route, he hurts another body part. Julio Jones is out. I mean, Marcus Johnson hurt his hamstring.
Yeah, even he's hurt.
Yeah.
Jeff Swaim is hurt.
Right. Ferk Daddy can't get involved. It's just, it's really abysmal right now for the Tennessee offense.
Well, the thing with Tannehill is like, why a dumb, like unhinged fan rant I go on fairly often on Twitter is like, there are certain quarterbacks, like, why would you ever respect a play fake from Ryan Tannehill? Like, it's Ryan Tannehill. Like, who cares? Just sell out and blow him up. Like, if it's, you get fooled and give up a big play, like once a game, like whatever. But like, when I see Ryan Tannehill play action, I'm like, just hammer him. Like, who cares? Like, it's Ryan Tannehill, blow him up. And that does happen sometimes. Teams actually do sell out against the play fakes against the Titans sometime. And I feel like that's going to really be a theme without Derrick Henry. Because as we know, it's been pretty well established. You don't actually need an effective running game to have effective play action. But I mean, you'd much rather be doing play action with Derrick Henry as your running back
than
whatever the Titans are doing right now, Dontrell Hilliard or something.
Amazing.
Just sell out. My message to Lee is just sell out against these play fakes. Like, just hammer him.
You sound like someone who doesn't have Ryan Tannehill rostered in your most important
league. Yeah, it's a good. I do not. I've been a lifelong Tannehill truther. And Denny, I know the answer. So you don't have to scramble to look this up if you don't know. Do you know what the Titans' Week 12 opponent and situation is?
No, I don't.
They are going to New England.
Oh yes, I did know that. Good.
I'm a little more borderline than you. I would maybe still rank Russell Wilson as the QB1. I will not be ranking Ryan Tannehill as a QB.
The Patriots have another 25-point defensive performance.
I know, yes. And yeah, you're going to get their point differential up to plus 482, even though they're only 8-4 or whatever. And Bill, all I can think of with the Patriots this year is, you know, the Breaking Bad meme. Like, Bill Belichick can indeed keep getting away with this, folks.
Yes. I have come to accept, it hurts, but I have come to accept the fact that the Patriots will defeat the Bucs in the Super Bowl this year.
No. It's going to be the Eagles. That's what I'm going back on now. 489 combined rushing yards in the Super Bowl. It's going to be 13-10 final. And I just Bucs Patriots. I would be honestly all about that.
Yeah, it would be great. I mean, they should have won. The Patriots should have beat them in Week 4.
They should have beat the Cowboys too. They should be like 9-2. Real quick, I mean, AJ Brown, by the way, against the Patriots, are we going to have him in the top 12 at receiver?
No, I mean, close. Probably. Close. I know I'm not calling anybody injury prone. If he plays, he'll probably get a lot of targets, even though, you know, Belichick is famous for shutting down your most dangerous weapon. And I think AJ Brown is their most dangerous weapon.
He is.
So, you know, I don't think in redraft, DFS is a whole different thing, but like in redraft, like, yeah, you're still rolling them out. You're not happy at all about it. In fact, you're extremely unhappy about it.
If you're looking for reasons for AJ Brown optimism, he's one of those guys where he's like kind of the ultimate player where, like, he goes into a week where it seems like it's a bad setup. Like, gosh, it feels like he's been hurt for two weeks. Like, this is a bad matchup. And then he has like 167 yards.
So. AJ Brown has never delivered on a good matchup. That is
a fact. Actually.
That is per my frustrated brain right now, that he is, every time he's in a blow up spot, he has two catches for 11 yards.
That is big facts right there. CeeDee Lamb concussed in yesterday's really, really disappointing loss for the Cowboys in Kansas City. He almost impossible for him to get cleared in time for Thanksgiving. I can think of one time during my time at NBC Sports Edge where someone got cleared in a short week, and I wasn't sure how it was even possible, But that's literally one time in 10 years, I think it's happened. You can basically consider CeeDee Lamb out for Thanksgiving. We know for a fact unvaccinated Amari Cooper is out for Thanksgiving. By the way, the Cowboys play on Thursday again in week 13. They do that every year. They have two teams to play on Thanksgiving, play on the following Thursday, so they're on full rest. But Amari Cooper is going to be up against it to get cleared even for that game. So a very fateful decision by Amari Cooper to not get the jab.
That's an interesting one.
It was an interesting one. And so, Denny, where are we at with the Cowboys pass catchers heading in this matchup with the Raiders, where Cedric Wilson, Malik Turner, Noah Brown is someone I'm told catches passes for the Dallas Cowboys? I don't even know what this question is. Just what is the state of the Cowboys pass catchers heading into Thanksgiving against the Raiders?
All right. Now, I don't think it's as bleak for fantasy purposes as you may think. So Michael Gallup's going to see double-digit targets. I'm pretty confident in that.
That's been a motif now since he entered the league, and I feel like it never happens, but I digress.
He saw double-digit against Kansas City.
Did he really? All right.
And he was out-targeting Lamb by a good margin before Lamb exited with that concussion at halftime. So anyway, he's the unquestioned number one pass catcher this week if Lamb is out. By the way, I think it was Davante Adams who cleared the protocol.
Wasn't that clear? Was that some sort of technicality? I don't understand. I didn't think that was possible.
I
don't want to tell people it's 100% impossible, because as you've said, we both know it's happened, but it's highly, highly unlikely.
I think the doctor's final question to clear the concussion protocol is, how important are you to your offense?
Yeah, that might have been it.
if the answer is very important, then they're like, okay, you're cleared.
You are cleared. I've never seen a better baseline test than this in all my life, Devontae.
Yeah. Just keep your eyes closed, because the light sensitivity will remain.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I'm sorry. We're making fun of a not funny thing. Cedric Wilson and Noah Brown each ran 31 routes against Kansas City, the second most among receivers behind only Gallup. Cedric Wilson had 7 targets, caught 4 of those, but had 2 unbelievably bad drops. And I know that does not sound like an endorsement of Cedric Wilson. But his game against Kansas City could have looked a lot better in the box score, which of course is the only thing that matters, if he had held on to those, because they were both downfield. They both would have been significant chunk plays. So I think Cedric Wilson becomes interesting. I don't know about Noah Brown, but I know Cedric Wilson becomes interesting alongside Gallup. The issue here is, will the Cowboys throw a single pass against the run funnel Raiders?
I mean, people are asking. People are wondering.
They could run the ball 45 times against Vegas.
I guess the good news, quote unquote, for like Cowboys, like pass catcher desperados, Ezekiel Elliott did like turn his ankle pretty badly against the Chiefs. He stayed in the game, but I wonder how much work he'll really be able to handle on a short week against the Raiders. You laid it out well. I mean, I think obviously Michael Gallup and Cedric Wilson, you can probably rely on for 6 to 7 targets at least. But beyond that, I think the funnel down will be more like Tony Pollard and Dalton Schultz than like the backup wide receivers who, they're going to be looking for reasons not to target, and probably a very, very safe 7 to 8 target floor for Dalton Schultz. Hopefully more work for Tony Pollard. So I agree with you actually that, 2 like superstars out for the Cowboys, but definitely not as bleak. It's not like we're getting Dak Prescott out of the top 10 bleak or anything like that. He'll still have enough places to funnel quality targets too.
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning Schultz. Our researcher Johnny mentions that the Vegas defense has been very generous to tight ends, allowing the 6th most yards to tight ends and the 3rd most receptions. So it is a nice spot for Schultz. I think if Lamb is out, and of course Cooper's already out, that he would function probably as the number 2 pass catcher ahead of Cedric Wilson.
I agree with that take. And yeah, so Dalton Schultz, tight end 1 overall, I think is what we're trending towards here for week 12. The Eagles clear 200 yards rushing for the 3rd time in 4 games on Sunday, pulverizing the Saints. Even as they lost Jordan Howard to a knee injury early in the second half, Miles Sanders kept fumbling. Only one of them showed up in the box score, but he fumbled inside his own 10-yard line, and he fumbled again inside his own 10-yard line, and they claimed that his forward progress was stopped. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really that great of a call. But Jordan Howard's out. They kept going to him. He had 16 carries for 94 yards and his return from an ankle injury against a tough run defense. And Denny, the Eagles' schedule now down the stretch, there's a bye week mixed in here, but this is the Eagles' next five games: at the Giants, at the Jets, versus the football team, versus the Giants, at the football team. Are we going to get this? I don't even know what we're going to talk about. Are we going to get 200 rushing yards every week, basically, from this Eagles offense?
If the Eagles can establish and can run this super run heavy offense, they're going to do it every single week. Like Nick Sirianni, for as much as I maybe ragged on the guy,
we may have said some unkind things, Nick. Yeah. We didn't. I mean, we were just joking around, Nick.
Mostly, it was about his hokey T-shirts that he would wear before a game. But you know, he's leaned into his personnel. Finally, I think we were talking, I think way back in June, about Nick Sirianni saying basically, my system is my system. If Jalen Hurts fits it, that's great.
Yes.
If not, we'll see. I don't know. And that raised some, you know, alarms. You know, we talked, will Jalen Hurts, how many starts will Jalen Hurts get? That was a legit question back in the summer. Obviously, he's going to get all of them if he's healthy. But that's only because Nick Sirianni has finally leaned into what he has with Hurts. So just as an example, this domination of the Saints defense. And the Saints, by the way, went into week 11 with one of the league's best run defenses, okay? Philadelphia rushed 50 times and threw 24 passes against the Saints. Sanders had 16 rushes. Howard had 10. Hurts had 18. Yes. 18 rushes. The Eagles over the season have a 52% pass rate, which is one of the lowest in the league. Since week 8, Philadelphia has a 32% pass rate. We're talking throwback to like 1962 here, the way that they're running.
We're talking winning football, Denny. Notice
we are, and I'm upset. I'm upset that
I'm upset because they are gonna keep getting away with it against
they
the
are.
Schedule too. And yeah, the Saints, but they entered week 11 allowing far and away the fewest rushing yards in the entire league. So by yardage, the Saints were the number one run defense. They probably still are the number one run defense in the entire NFL. And that's and I don't know if people listening may have heard this crazy stat already. It's been making the rounds. In the past 6 years, the Saints have allowed two 200-yard rushing performances, and both were in the past 2 years against the Jalen Hurts-led Eagles.
Yeah, amazing.
So they've got something special cooking here.
You know, between the success of the Philadelphia rushing attack and the failings and the shortcomings of the Kansas City and Buffalo passing attacks, We are set for a stone age of football coming up, where teams are going to try to emulate a massively run heavy offense and get away from the pass heavy stuff that the Chiefs and Bills have done over the past few years.
Well, don't forget about the Patriots there too, and don't forget about the 49ers, who have been like Eaglesing very hard over the past 2 weeks. But yeah, we've got several teams like doing like legit 70s ball.
Yeah.
Kind of beginning with the Ravens the past few years, and now lots of people following in their footsteps.
I mean, the Niners wish they were the Eagles.
They do.
Come on.
They were. I got a mea culpa real quick. I may have on several podcasts last week talked about my belief that the Jacksonville Jaguars would cover against the San Francisco 49ers. And I may have even said outright, I may have used the words outright and win.
Yeah,
a few times.
Yeah. Nevertheless, we persist.
We soldier on. Michael Carter has defined lone bright spot for the Jets this season, but now he has an ankle injury heading into a dream matchup with the Texans. Denny, this is right up your alley. If Carter can't go, is it going to be Ty Johnson or Tevin Coleman season for the Jets?
Oh man, I think it'll be Tevin Coleman season, and I know you don't love to hear that.
No, but I sadly think I agree
too. Yeah, so Coleman was second on the team against Miami with 5 rushing attempts behind Carter's 9 attempts. Each of the 3 Jets running backs saw 1 target from Joe Flacco, so we are beyond the Mike White days. As you know, as we remember for years, Mike White dumped it off.
I mean, my kids are young. When they like, think back on like the football they loved from their youth, it's going to be Mike White.
They'll think of Mike White targeting Michael Carter 11 times in one half, which was the peak of my life.
That's what made my kids football fans.
Yes. And but no, we don't have that anymore with Flacco. And by the way, if the Jets want to win some games down the stretch, and they probably shouldn't for draft reasons, no, but if they want to win, they need to keep playing Flacco over Zach.
You love Flacco, man.
I don't
love him. You were the one furthering the narrative that Jalen Hurts might get benched for Flacco.
I mean, he's pretty decent for fantasy, and I mean, I'm not talking about playing Joe Flacco. I'm not saying use him. I'm just saying he gets the ball to his pass.
He's good for the weapons. There's no doubt about it.
We could not say that about Zach Wilson. Not even close. Anyway. Yeah, so I think it would be Tevin Coleman, but honestly, the answer is probably nobody in this Jets backfield if Michael Carter misses
time. Well, it is the Texans, though. I mean, I think both, this is the state of running backs, they'll probably both be in the top 40. I'm going to dive into it later in this week, but one of them is going to be in the top 36. It's probably going to be Tevin Coleman, man, which maybe I should just stop doing the article if I have to rank Tevin Coleman as a flex. I think I might just not do the article this week.
You're going to have more than two beers.
Yeah. I'm just going to tell the powers that be. It's the holiday week. I just don't have enough time to do the article. Like, I know we're a fantasy football website and, you know, like, people really, really depend on this, but I'm just not going to do the article this week. Hey. I'm like, all right, well, you're fired. at least I didn't have to rank Tevin Coleman as a flex play.
And that's what matters in the end.
That is what matters in the end. Principles
that's right.
are what matter. With Allen Robinson inactive, Darnell Mooney finally asserted himself as the Bears' top weapon against the Ravens. Denny catching 5 of a career-high 16 targets for 121 yards and a 60-yard touchdown. We would like to see better efficiency, Denny, but with Robinson probably out for Thanksgiving against the Lions, is it Darnell Mooney wide receiver 2 season?
Look, if Mooney can get 25 targets in a game, he might be able to get 150 yards.
Nevertheless.
It is. I just was dying to make that joke because he caught 5 of 16 targets against the Ravens. But wow. Yeah, 16 targets, that's good for many would call it a solid 49% target share.
People are saying.
On the day, which is just outrageous. We're talking like Devontae Adams territory there. So Mooney now has 31 targets over his past 3 games. And, you know, something that I think is hopeful is that his yards per target has hovered over that 3-game stretch between 6 and 7 yards. So it's not the 11, 12, 13, 14 yards per target that we saw him get last year. And those lead to splash plays and sometimes big plays downfield when you have a quarterback who can deliver it to you. But lower yards per target, I should say, means that he's getting more catchable, balls that can give him a fantasy floor week in and week out, especially with this sort of volume with Robinson out.
You were saying yards per target, and I was thinking yards per route run. I'm like, I don't think he's averaging 8 yards per route run.
No, he's not doing that.
No, and what was really crazy about this usage yesterday, though, is he entered halftime with only 4 targets, and Justin Fields barely played in the second half, so he got like 10 to 12 targets from Andy Dalton in 2 quarters. So maybe you're kind of hoping that it's Andy Dalton on Thanksgiving if you're a Darnell Mooney manager, but I also think Justin Fields would get home with Darnell Mooney against the Lions. The Ravens, we kind of talked about last year, have just a horrible matchup for Allen Robinson with the way they blitz. He wasn't ready to handle that. Andy Dalton did what you're supposed to do against the Ravens, which is hit big plays against their really, really shaky secondary. So it might be slightly better for Darnell Mooney's week 12 odds if it's Andy Dalton under center, but I think I'll have him in the top 24, even if it's Justin Fields, because as we talk about the Lions, unless you're Baker Mayfield, the Lions will get you out of whatever slump you happen to be in, and you can do whatever you want to do on offense.
Yeah, I mean, Mooney has so little competition for targets, and that's critical. Even though, you know, he is extremely talented, and Bears coaches have been talking him up for 2 years now as a big play receiver. I don't know if he fits the profile of like an alpha type receiver, but with nobody else there, it's looking pretty good for him to once again see a bunch of looks against Detroit.
He might not be an alpha because he would be very comparable to the size of everyone on the NBC Sports Edge podcast. You know, you don't usually want that from an alpha receiver. Nope. Denny Brandon Ayuk caught 6 passes for 85 yards and a touchdown, at least that, for the second time in 3 weeks. He commanded a 31.8% target share against the Jaguars as Deebo Samuel went full Cordarrelle Patterson and took 8 carries out of the backfield, caught only 1 pass. So strange things going on in this 49ers offense as it gets fully established. But are we getting back to wide receiver 3 territory with Brandon Ayuk, or is it just going to be too volatile in this run-based offense?
Yeah, I mean, he was fortunate against the Jags to catch that touchdown and to get involved early before it was a blowout. Because if we know one thing about Kyle Shanahan, it's that he doesn't want to score too many points.
No, he's never a fan of that. No.
Right. So once you have a 2-score lead, then you stop trying to score points, and that's the Shanahan way.
There's a gentlemanly way to play this game.
Yes, that is. And it is. And it's nice.
Chivalry.
It's not dead. Chivalry is not dead. Shanahan shows that every week. So Brandon Ayuk has run a route on 95% of the Niners dropbacks over the past 3 weeks. Basically everyone, which is more than any other receiver, including Deebo Samuel. He's out targeted Deebo 19 to 15 over that span. Ayuk has been targeted on 22% of his pass routes over those 3 games. Deebo has been targeted on 17% of his pass routes over that stretch. So
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, Ayuk's not getting 7, 8, 9 carries out of the backfield, which is tremendous usage for Deebo. This is not a knock against Deebo, but it seems like the fantasy points on this offense are going to be very concentrated between Deebo, Kittle, and Brandon Ayuk. His usage is fantastic since he got out of the doghouse.
Deebo, there's kind of strange things going on. I wonder if Deebo could be like entering like this weird realm where he's going to be fantasy relevant, of course, but like his fantasy floor and ceiling go lower as his like real life value yeah. increases. Like playing these like kind of crazy Swiss Army touches for the 49ers offense. So just something to watch with Deebo Samuel, because he was extremely valuable in real life. And in fantasy yesterday, he did get the touchdown, but only 1 catch. Just kind of strange things going on there. And Kyle Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan was like, he was like making the entire nation the Joker during 49ers. Everyone, you went on Twitter, I was like, just please make it stop. Just anything other than what you're doing.
I know. I mean, he didn't force Jimmy Garoppolo to miss a wide open Jeff Wilson in the end zone.
No.
In the first quarter. He didn't force that. But besides that, his offensive usage and style was very Joker-fying. You're right.
It was. And it's still not great for fantasy right now, but it's at least like actually now like looking like a well-run offense again. And got to give some props to, because he finally, even for him, was scoring too few points. Like, all right, this is ridiculous. Yes. Got to actually score some points now. Denny and I will be right back with, we hope you're right. We've been working on this all season, just the perfect 5-round draft. So
much work.
We hope you're ready for it. We'll be right back.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Get an edge in your fantasy league with player rankings, projections, tiers, and alerts for players on your team or who you are eyeing up on the waiver wire by signing up for NBC Sports Edge Plus, and do it at a discount. Use the promo code GOOD10 and get 10% off your annual subscription. That is Good 10 for 10% off NBC Sports Edge Plus. The NFL season is in full swing, and the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet has you covered with Sunday Night 7. This week, you'll have a chance to win $1.1 million. It starts Thanksgiving night between the Bills and Saints. And starting on Sunday night, we're giving away $1 million every week for the remainder of the regular season. And that contest is live right now. So download today from your app store or visit NBCSports.com/predictor. Denny, we're so, like, I've got just a lot of notes here on this. Yeah. And so Ned, what is the exercise here now? We're gonna go back through August ADP and like look at 1 through 12 basically. And are we gonna do this by round? Like,
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. By
so
round.
We're not gonna be like Jonathan. We're not gonna be like Cooper Kupp in the second round or whatever.
No. Listen, as we've talked about for the past 6 weeks, we are going to do this round by round and pick the player who would emerge from the round as the best player. And we're not going to do it from the start of the draft. We're not going to be picking from a specific part of the draft, I should say, just the round.
So should I list 1 through 12 and then, or how do you want to do this?
Well, I'll lead it here. All right. So we're in a 12 team league, first 12 picks, where, you know, McCaffrey, Cook, Kamara, Henry, Elliott, Adams, Kelsey, Jones, Barkley, Eckler, Taylor, and Chubb. Now, I think we can come to an agreement that it has to be Jonathan Taylor.
It does. And yeah. I mean, he's, even if Derrick Henry was healthy, would it be Jonathan Taylor at this point?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not. It would be a debate, but he's definitely catching. He's still not catching as many passes as he should be catching, but he was catching more passes than Derrick Henry's ever caught at any point. He's a very, Jonathan Taylor, like to the eye, is like a clearly good pass catcher.
Yes.
And like he's made Marlon Mack a healthy scratch. Even with Marlon Mack a healthy scratch, Nyheim Hines' role is not getting bigger. And yeah, I don't see how, even if Derrick Henry were healthy, Jonathan Taylor's so much more efficient. He's in a better overall offense. Yeah, I think it would have to be Jonathan Taylor as the first round pick.
I mean, people are talking about a running back as the NFL MVP. You know, this doesn't happen every day. And if you look at the other guys, it's just tons of injuries. It's Aaron Jones, who went a few picks before Taylor, you know, injured. Saquon Barkley missed a bunch of time. Obviously, Derrick Henry done for the season. Kamara's missed 2 games now. Dalvin Cook missed some time. CMC missed, what, 3 or 3.5 games? So
more than that, yeah. I feel like the only other choices would really be Eckler or maybe Kelsey.
Yeah, that's right. It came down to Eckler and Taylor, and obviously Taylor is the play. So we end up with Taylor in round one, okay? So round two starts off with receivers, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, then Najee Harris, Hopkins.
The pick Najee Harris. Anyways, continue.
The pick, you think he's okay?
Well, maybe. Right. I actually don't know who's behind him.
I do not. We have Gibson, Patrick Mahomes at 18 overall, disastrous. Calvin Ridley at 19, disastrous for other reasons. Metcalf, Mixon, Waller, Jefferson, and then AJ Brown. So right.
There's some choices there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly Tyreek Hill.
You consider Tyreek Hill, you can consider Najee Harris, you consider Joe Mixon, and you can consider Justin Jefferson. But you think it's clearly Tyreek Hill?
Yeah, I mean, as far as like consistent production as a weird stat compiler in the new Kansas City offense, the underneath stuff. I mean, Justin Jefferson like 1 week yesterday, but there was a lot of frustration for 3 or 4 weeks there.
That's true. I guess you don't want to go full robust RB with Jonathan Taylor and Joe Mixon, and Tyreek Hill is kind of in a weird way been like the receiver version of Jonathan Taylor, at least from like a dependability perspective. Yeah. It's weird. Like the ceiling is essentially gone.
It is.
But yeah, every week, 6 or 7 receptions. You can make a pretty big argument for Najee Harris too, I feel like, but there's going to be other running back values. I'm assuming Tyreek Hill does make a lot of sense for the second round.
All right. So we have Taylor in the first. We have Tyreek in the second. We're on to the third round, which starts with Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I think that's the pick.
Something. We have Kittle, who is not it. We have Keenan Allen, who is not it, even though he's been hot lately. McLaurin, then Josh Allen, then your guy David Montgomery. Allen Robinson at 31 overall.
Man. You know, every year that happens where there's a guy who hadn't even really been hurt. Like, he's finally hurt now. That is just like becomes bad. And Allen Robinson is kind of just the became bad pick.
Yep. Chris Carson after him, CeeDee Lamb, James Robinson, Mike Evans, and then Josh Jacobs. So does it come down to McLaurin and...
I mean, Keenan Allen, to be honest. I mean, Keenan, McLaurin, or CeeDee Lamb. Probably, honestly, CeeDee Lamb or Keenan Allen, I feel like.
Really? It cannot be CeeDee Lamb.
I mean, in terms, he might have more overall points than Keenan Allen right now. In fact, he probably does. Maybe not. There's no way to find out. I mean,
We're looking into it. The interns are scrambling.
Let's see here. CeeDee Lamb is more averaging more points per game than Keenan Allen, Denny.
Yeah.
The folks are shocked. I think I would say the pick is CeeDee Lamb because he's not as consistent or as dependable as Keenan Allen, who's now getting 12 or 13 targets every week again. But CeeDee has a pretty decent usage floor. And he's actually – we're not getting spiked weeks from Tyreek Hill right now, Denny. So we need to mix in some spiked weeks from CeeDee Lamb.
All right. You've convinced me. So we start with Jonathan Taylor, Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb. We're looking good. We're on to round number four, which starts with DeAndre Swift.
I think I see the pick at number 37 in DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, probably, because we have Miles Sanders, Robert Woods, Kyler Murray, all of whom are not going to be it. Amari Cooper, not it. Chris Godwin, absolutely not. Well, Lamar.
Oh, never mind. I see the pick.
And then we have Cooper Kupp at 44. That's the one.
There it is.
Cooper Kupp at 44, yes. And remember, this is what? How many picks after? This is six picks after Robert Woods. Whew. So that's how good that we are as a community of fantasy football enthusiasts at picking players.
I think it's longer than that after Robert. No, so Cooper Kupp was the number 44. Yeah, okay, it was six picks. Number 44 overall player by ADP. Has there ever been like that game changing of a pick? I guess there has.
I can't think of any at the moment, but
I'm sure they exist.
But yeah, definitely there have been guys who just emerge. And you know, we talked in the summer about how like a lot of slot receivers had thrived with Matthew Stafford, but
that was something we had you look into because I'm like, has a slot receiver ever played well with Matthew Stafford? And then you're like, oh yeah, actually, like all the time.
Yeah, and not like this though, not this sort of like nuclear production. But yeah, so we're going running back and then three receivers in a row here in our perfect draft. So we're
kind of boxing ourselves in. I wonder if we should change the Tyreek Hill pick to Joe Mixon.
Why are you going with Joe Mixon?
Dude, he's like,
even close.
He's close. He is close. He's having a monster year, actually. Najee Harris, I think maybe we should change the second round pick to Najee Harris.
Are you looking at their total points compared to Tyreek Hill?
I mean, I guess not. I don't know. Let's do the fifth round pick. All right. Man, by the way, ADP 48 was Miles Gaskin.
Yeah.
46 was Kyle Pitts. The scene is getting tough.
Yeah, I don't love to think about that. All right, we're on to round number five. Correct. Yes.
Five. This is the final round. This is the fateful round. Are we going to get a tight end? Are we going to get a running back? Who are we going to get here?
Right. So we have Mark Andrews leading off this round, and then Adam Thielen, Deontay Johnson, DJ Moore, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott.
Oh no! Don't say the next one out loud.
Michael Davis. Mike Davis. Kareem Hunt, TJ Hockenson. Daryl Henderson and Javonte Williams.
That was an interesting one. I didn't remember Daryl Henderson's ADP being that high, actually.
Me neither. But who are we going? We're going with Deontay Johnson. No, we can't. Or can we?
I was going to say maybe Mark Andrews, to be honest. Or Daryl Henderson. I mean, I can't remember what running back Easter eggs await us. I'm sure there's probably some like truly insane running back values. So probably don't need to force it with Daryl Henderson. I would say we would go Mark Andrews.
Me too. Yes. Mark Andrews is averaging 15 and a half PPR points per game. That is about 1.2 points per game less than Travis Kelce this season. And yeah, I mean, you the skeptics may say, but there were huge games against the Colts and somebody else I can't remember at the moment. And yeah, it's true, but you got that, and those probably won you your week. Your tight end posting 40 points is not a bad thing. Many are saying it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's called fantasy football. And he's been furnishing a pretty nice floor every week. been mixing in way more ceiling of late over the past month with more touchdowns and, you know, very super volatile position beyond Travis Kelce. Because I mean, even Darren Waller is not doing it every week.
No.
TJ Hockenson is getting killed by the offense he's in. See real quick what some of these crazier ADPs are as we end the show.
Another thing about Andrews is that even though the start of the season was a little bit slow, he was running routes and being targeted at rates that we had not seen before. So like 2020 was very disappointing for Andrews drafters because he was still sort of like a part-time player in that offense. But between becoming a full-time route runner and the Ravens offense becoming far more balanced this year, meaning more passing, has led to this spike. And he has an outside shot, honestly. You know, he's what, 30 points behind Travis Kelce. So like an outside shot at tight end one overall. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you can maybe catch him. And as you were talking, I was going through trying to look for hilarious ADPs. And I mean, this is like the most sober, straightforward year for ADP. People drafted very, very well this year, actually. I mean, there's some really unfortunate stuff like Kenny Golladay, wide receiver 30, Robbie Anderson, wide receiver 32, but that was all defensible. I mean, Gus Edwards is RB 27. I'm not seeing anything that just stands out as like laugh out loud funny.
I see something that's funny.
Lay it on us.
Trey Sermon at RB 32.
I mean, that's true. And that one, there were people who was first guessing that one too, actually. And like a fourth round rookie, or what was he, a third round rookie? Yeah, based on not a whole lot other than his draft position. Because right. Some of those warning lights began to flash even in the summer for Trey Sermon. That's a pretty bad. Trey Sermon, by the way, one pick ahead of Debo Samuel by ADP.
Another very terrible ADP, and I kind of thought this at the time, was Jalen Hurts going at 95 overall, QB 12. Jalen Hurts is now the QB 1 overall in fantasy, over Josh Allen, over Mahomes, over everybody. So that never made sense to me. I guess the only way that Jalen Hurts would not be a top five quarterback was if he got benched. And I guess, like we said at the beginning of the show, that seemed like a possibility. But now he's on his way, you know, potentially to being the top scoring quarterback in all of fantasy.
Yeah, Hurts was like kind of like the ultimate sharp pick. I didn't get much Hurts. It's kind of you have to be comfortable. Like Hurts is the ultimate, like you just laser in on the upside. You know, everyone in football has like major downside and like this injury type sport. And I'm sure lots of smart people ended up with lots of Jalen Hurts, probably lots of Jamar Chase too.
Yeah.
Like instead of focusing on like one or two like beat writer observations from August, probably focused on more his insane upside. And same thing with Jalen Hurts. Yeah, QB 12, going behind Ryan Tannehill, huh?
I mean, in hindsight, that may be the most egregious ADP in all of a redraft.
I would have never done that, by the way. I'm not even saying that as a joke. You would never have caught me dead drafting Ryan Tannehill.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I believe that 100%.
But that is all the time we have for today. Hopefully that exercise was in some way valuable. Maybe it wasn't.
It was fun.
It was fun.
You know, and we you need your content. So
content.
We gave you your content.
We did. And yeah, like I said, Thanksgiving takes. We're just going to be flowing all week, I think. So yeah, we get Kyle in tomorrow for our first of two preview shows where we preview the Thanksgiving slate. And I mean, the young man, has he ever even celebrated Thanksgiving before? He's so young. I mean, he might not even know what it's all about. So we're
going to have to tell him. We're going to have to tell him about the history of Thanksgiving. So that should be fun.
Yeah, Google William Bradford, Kyle Dvorak. I think he was one of the settlers who was involved in that. I have no idea. But anyways, that's all the time we have for today. For Denny, I am Pat. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be back all week. Thank you for listening.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.